Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. My guest this first half hour of the second hour today is Elaine Castle. She teaches law and psychology at Marymount University. She's a lawyer in Washington, D.C. and Virginia. She writes for Fine Law and her own blog, Civil Liberties Watch. She's the author of an excellent little book called The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush and Ashcroft Have Dismantled the Bill of Rights. Welcome back to the show, Elaine.
Thank you.
It's always so good to have you on.
Thanks
now,
for having me.
I'm very interested in this case, Ahmed Omar Abu Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that end of December 2003, you got a phone call. So why don't you fill us in from there?
Well, actually, I think I first got a phone call in the summer, right after he disappeared
from his
classes at the Saudi Arabian University where he was. His family lives in the town where I practice law. And it was in June of 2003 when he was preparing to take his final exams and come home. He's an American citizen born in Houston, but had lived in Falls Church, Virginia most of his life, that he was seized by Saudi law enforcement and taken out of the classroom and put in a Saudi jail. And there he remained until early this year, February of this year, when he was returned to the United States after his parents filed suit against the U.S. government.
You wrote in your article how the U.S. government was fighting tooth and nail to leave him in Saudi Arabia, but then right before they lost the case, they went ahead and brought him here anyway. What's going on?
Well, actually, for many months before that, they denied, first they denied publicly that they even knew about him. People, insiders, knew that that wasn't true because he had been visited by FBI agents and federal prosecutors from Alexandria, Virginia, who were trying to connect him to the case of the Alexandria 11, the guys who were convicted for playing paintball. You remember the paintball cases?
Yes.
And so because this is a small community, a small Muslim American community in Northern Virginia, they all attend the same mosque. And so I think they were looking over there hoping to get him to implicate him in that case. As it turned out, there was another man over there that the Saudis detained at the request of the Americans. And the Alexandria prosecutors indicted him in connection with the Alexandria 11 and extradited him to the United States. He is the only one of the Alexandria 11 defendants who pled not guilty, who went to trial, and was acquitted by Judge Brinkema. Now, after the case ended, Abu Ali's parents, who had, stayed quiet, they had contacted me, but they asked me not to write about anything. They didn't make any legal moves. But prosecutors and defense attorneys, by the way, had been talking to prosecutors about Abu Ali. And they expected after the Alexandria 11 case was over and he wasn't charged that he would be brought home. But, of course, it was a year later and he wasn't brought home. And so they filed their lawsuit in U.S. District Court. And initially the prosecutors or the government, U.S. government, is going, oh, we don't know anything about that guy. And, of course, that was quickly squelched. And then they said, he's being held by the Saudis because the Saudis are going to charge him with terrorism, crimes of terror. In fact, the day the family filed suit, they got a call from the State Department saying the Saudis are going to charge your son with crimes of terror. Well, that never happened. And when it became clear that the judge in the District of Columbia, Judge Bates, was going to require the government to explain what it was up to, one day, suddenly, Washington's birthday, Abu Ali appeared in Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm confused. Hang on right there. We'll be right back.
All right.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Elaine Castle. She's a lawyer, and she's a professor. She teaches law, and she's got a great blog called Civil Liberties Watch. Her book is The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush and Ashcroft Have Dismantled the Bill of Rights. And lo and behold, we're speaking about dismantled rights right now. Now, okay, I'm gonna give you my brief understanding of what we got so far, and you correct me where I'm messing up here. Okay, summer 03, this American citizen is removed from his class in Saudi Arabia. I believe I understand from you that basically what happened was the federal prosecutors were fishing for more conspirators, quote-unquote, to fit in their Alexandria 11 case, the paintball case, right?
Yes.
Okay, now, and real quick, tell me the name of your article about the paintball case, because I know you've written all about how innocent those
guys are. Oh, my gosh, you know, I don't know the name of it, because I wrote several articles.
Everybody search Alexandria 11 and Elaine Castle.
Well, I'll just go paintball and put my name in Google, and it'll come right up.
There you go, C-A-S-S-E-L.
Right.
And you know, because I think that's important that they're innocent men as well, but here the federal prosecutors are saying, hey, here's one more Arab from this same town, and
right,
he's over there in Saudi right now. Let's see if we can torture the truth out of him, huh?
Right, exactly.
So so the FBI actually had the Saudis pull him out of class?
Yes, they did.
Okay, and now these are the same people who are denying in front of a judge that they know anything about this case.
Yes.
For how long?
They did. And when they finally had to admit that they did, they told the judge, well, actually, we can't let his lawyers know or his family know why we have him, because it's just too, you know, sensitive. We will tell you, Judge Bates, why we still have him in Saudi Arabia, suggesting that Abu Ali was so dangerous that he couldn't be on U.S. soil. Judge Bates said, I don't think so. I don't never heard of such a thing, of you giving me secret evidence and not telling this man's, you know, his family's attorneys. But I'll tell you what, I'll think about it over the weekend. And while he was thinking about it, I received the email, which was actually the night of Washington's birthday, which I think was about February 20th, an email from Abu Ali's sister, who at first was very excited and said he's coming home tomorrow. But I thought, coming home to what? And she said, well, he's going to be in court in Alexandria. And I said, for what? She said, I don't know. And I said, oh, well, that can't possibly be good news. Sure enough, when he was greeted and brought to Alexandria, brought to federal court that Tuesday morning, the government issued an indictment, which obviously they had called a grand jury, you see, in the later stages of the, you know, as the case was unraveling in D.C. to bring him home. And they indicted him. They said that, get this now, he is not charged with a plot to assassinate the president. He's charged.
Well, but that's what TV said.
But he was said to have said that he wanted to kill George Bush.
Okay, but they're not charging him with that.
No,
why not?
No, they are. But when you read the media reports, they will lead you to believe that he is on trial for trying to assassinate or planning to assassinate Bush. He's actually charged with associating with people who may be members of Al-Qaeda, meaning, you know, they went to school with them. There was some allegation that one of them gave him a laptop. And it's, if you read the indictment, you would just be going, oh, it doesn't match what the government is saying. That
is there a federal law against being associated with somebody?
There is a federal, you know, and you didn't know that, did you? That if you, in fact, I have to laugh when I was thinking about it.
Am I in danger for talking to you on the phone right now?
You probably are. Because under the Patriot Act, if you are associating with anybody, well, I guess you could say I'm not on the terrorist list yet, as far as I know, but Al-Qaeda
is.
Yeah, and so if you are having anything to do with anybody who is on the, you know, terrorist list of organizations, then yes, you could be charged with cavorting with that terrorist. In fact, this is why people who have been involved with Islamic charities have been indicted. Not because they were doing anything, but because their charities might have funneled money to a anti-American cause, or a cause that Americans don't believe in. So, you know, forget the First Amendment, right? Freedom of association. Can't forget it, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. And so then the government said that they would introduce evidence that showed that Abu Ali confessed to all the things that they were charging him with, and Abu Ali may have made statements to Saudis, but he claims that he did so while he was tortured. So the government has already said that he cannot have access to witnesses from Saudi Arabia. Oh, interestingly, a couple of the witnesses who supposedly were in present when he said he was, you know, involved in an attempt to assassinate Bush are dead. So can't have those, but the prosecutor said, just trust us. We will tell you what he said, but we're not bringing these witnesses to the United States. And of course, the case that's already been decided by the courts in Virginia that they don't have to. They're doing it in the Massawi case. The prosecutors are going to tell the judge and the jury what they say that the witnesses said. Now, don't you like that? How's that for no Sixth Amendment?
Yeah, never heard of that one either.
And so the prosecutors are going to tell the judge what the witnesses said. And, of course, you're supposed to believe it. The jury's going to believe it. The judge is going to believe it because Mr. Federal Prosecutor said it was so.
Well, I guess this guy should be thankful that they're not just turning him over to the Navy. I mean, after all.
Well, it could be in Guantanamo, right?
Right. I mean, isn't that really the modus operandi? When they accuse you of something heinous, but then it turns out they have no evidence whatsoever, like Paul Wolfowitz admitted was the case with Jose Padilla.
Right.
Then they just turn you over to the Navy. That way they don't have to give you a fair trial and watch you walk out of there.
And I tell you what, I think the reason, and apparently there were reports that he was constantly being charged with that. In fact, his parents were told that if they made any legal moves, that they warned that may be what happened to him, and then they'd never see him again. But, of course, the Padilla case is in such limbo. You know, the federal court, the district court in South Carolina now has said that he must be released. But, of course, the government has not done it. You know, this is also a government that does nothing that a judge, we know that.
Right. And by the way, Elaine,
tell
let me...
them to do. You know those damned activist judges, right? Judges tell you to follow the law, and the Bush administration will charge the judge, you know, with being an activist judge and saying they're going to impeach him or worse. I had to laugh, though, talking about your comment about association, because I was listening to Tom DeLay this week explain away all these trips that they were paid for by agents of foreign governments under the guise of being charitable organizations. And he said, look, you don't expect me to know everybody who's paying for my trips, do you? And I thought about the Abu Ali case, and I thought about the Muslims who have been charged with collaborating with terrorists because they didn't know. So, you know, there's obviously a different standard if you're Tom DeLay.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Now,
wait, hang on one sec. Before you go on, I'm sorry. Don't lose that train of thought, but I want to drop my footnote real quick. Paul Wolfowitz told, or at least was quoted by the BBC on June 13th, 2002, quote, "I don't think there was actually a plot beyond some fairly loose talk." And that's the former Deputy Secretary of Defense talking about Jose Padilla, who was being held by the Navy. So that's why we turned him over to the Navy, because he's not guilty.
That's right. And because, you know what? I think the thing with Abu Ali, I mean, this is my spin, is that God help you if the government doesn't get what it wants out of you, because they're going to get their pound of flesh one way or the other. And I think that Abu Ali was never going to come back from Saudi Arabia. But if once their hand was forced and they had to bring him back, then they're saying, boy, you're never going to see the light of day. And so now he's facing 100 years in prison. And his trial, he was denied his right to a speedy trial by a judge in federal court in Alexandria. Tell me why he is denied his right to a speedy trial. The Justice Department has gotten a delay until August. His parents are not allowed to visit him unless they are accompanied by FBI agents and speak English. So they have refused to see him. Now, that condition has never been put on anyone.
Well, you told me that you mentioned in your articles that at the bail hearing there was a problem because he's presumed dangerous. Is that the same thing?
Oh, yes.
Guilty?
Under the Patriot Act, yes. Under an amendment to the Patriot Act that was enacted just in November 2004, anyone charged with a terrorist-related crime, no matter how remote it is, has to prove to the judge that he or she is not dangerous in order to be granted bail. So instead of the Eighth Amendment, okay, well, so we're now, what, down to at least the Third or Fourth Amendment violated here. The Eighth Amendment requires that the government prove that you would be dangerous or be a flight risk in order for them to keep you pending a trial. But that presumption disappeared with an amendment to the Patriot Act in November of 2004. So that's another powerful thing. Anything they can throw into an indictment that sounds at all remotely terrorist-related. And now how are you going to prove a negative?
Well, ask Saddam Hussein how he proved what he didn't have.
Yes, and he didn't.
And as long as we're marking off amendments to the Constitution that are no longer in force, this man's parents' house was searched secretly under the Patriot Act, right? So there's our Fourth Amendment gone too.
Under the Patriot Act and under a FISA warrant. In fact, they had no notice of it until after the fact.
So since the Ninth and Tenth Amendments never existed, we basically are down to the Third Amendment, that they can't put soldiers in our houses, and that's basically all we got left.
Talk about trampling. And I think the thing that's just so shocking to me every time I hear about another case like this is that this happened so quickly and we're so far down the road that this doesn't even make waves. I mean, you don't hear anybody ranting and raving about it much except me, do you?
No.
And
that's why I keep having you on the show over and over again, because there's really nobody else who's really paying attention.
No, nobody's talking about it. And the headlines in the Washington Post, every time there's a story about the case, because it's in Alexandria, Virginia, it'll say things like, terrorist accused of plot to murder Bush.
Yeah.
Hearing tomorrow. And you go, you guys...
Hey, well, don't you know that they found a gun magazine and some radical writings at his house?
The same gun magazine that had a pro-Bush political advertisement.
Uh-oh, hang tight. We'll be right back with Elaine Castle, the Weekend Interview Show. My friends, welcome back to the show, the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Elaine Castle. She's the author of The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush and Ashcroft Have Dismantled the Bill of Rights. She runs a great blog called Civil Liberties Watch, teaches law in D.C. and Virginia. I want to read this real quick from United Press International yesterday. Terror suspects sent to torturing regimes. London, Britain, and other Western nations are meeting the terror threat by sending suspects to regimes that employ torture, a report published Friday says. The damning 91-page report compiled by Human Rights Watch says dozens of terror suspects have been deported to torturing regimes on the basis of, quote, flimsy assurances the suspects will not be abused. Most claim to have been tortured. The report criticizes the British government for adopting a policy of extradition at all costs to avoid the difficulties of monitoring suspects who cannot be tried because of insufficient evidence. The United States is criticized for its practice of extraordinary rendition, where terror suspects are sent to regimes that use torture to extract intelligence. The information is then sent to the U.S. security services. That headline is on the front page of antiwar.com today. Mm-hmm. Terror suspects sent to torturing regimes, about a new study by Human Rights Watch. And this brings up the question to me, the biggest confusion I have about this whole, you know, legal side of the war on terrorism here, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Castle, is we have John Walker Lynn, we have Padilla, Hamdi, mm-hmm. Moussaoui, Abu Ali, Al-Mari, and mm-hmm. they're all being treated differently. Some of them are allowed to go to court, some of them are turned over to the mm-hmm. Navy, some of them go to court for a little while, like Al-Mari, and then they grab him out of the courtroom and turn him over to the Navy later.
Right.
I'm looking for a little consistency in my police state here. Is that too much to ask?
Well, I think that that's probably the nature of a police state, is that it's inconsistent and it's arbitrary and capricious and the rules are ad hoc, but you never know what they are. And so you don't know, and that's the point. And they're unaccountable. And so the Bush administration is absolutely lawless. They do anything they want to, and if they don't get away with it in court, they appeal it to a higher court until they do get away with it, or, as you say, they will name you an enemy combatant, like they did with Padilla. I mean, remember that Padilla was in court in New York. He was about to be charged with something. He was there as a witness in a grand jury investigation, and as soon as his attorney filed a petition for him to have bail pending his testimony, because he was held, you know, under the law that says you can keep people that might flee, he was taken away literally in the middle of the night without notice to the attorney and taken to South Carolina and turned over, as you say, to the Navy. And so at any given point, you can be removed. That is the most extraordinary thing, that man was already in the jurisdiction of a U.S. court, and he was taken out by the Pentagon.
Same thing happened to Al-Mari, too.
Yes, correct. And again, that was the case, too, the little I know about Al-Mari, is that he hadn't done anything. And if you haven't done anything that they can nail you with, God help you.
Right. It's better to go ahead and commit a crime. Right.
They're going to ruin you. I mean, so the vengeance, you know, it just makes me think about the things that I read, you know, as a little girl, you know, Solzhenitsyn and, quote, Red China in the 50s, Stalin. Man, it's here. I'm telling you, it's here, and it's right in my backyard because Alexandria, Virginia is the absolute hotbed for these type of prosecutions. So, you know, look, Gonzalez sat there a week ago in testimony in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee and admitted the things about renditions. Why are, he says, oh, well, you know, once they, as Negroponte said, well, once they get there, we don't know what they're doing with them. But we know that the only reason you're snatching people off the street and sending them to Syria, our sworn enemy, is so that Syria will torture them.
Right.
I mean, what are the reasons?
Which, remember that, you know, as we're picking a fight with Syria, that they've been torturing people for us and being very cooperative.
Well, they did it not long ago with the man from Canada, Amar Arar, who is now suing the U.S. government. Remember, he was kidnapped out of Kennedy Airport on his way back to Canada. He was on a trip. He was kidnapped, literally, taken in a private plane by the FBI and the CIA, dumped in Syria, where he remained for a year until Syria returned him to Canada because the U.S. would not tell them what to do with him.
Yeah, so the Syrians just got sick and tired of putting things under his fingernails.
No, we don't want the guy. I mean, now, and the truth, that is what the Saudis did with Abu Ali, because they said, ultimately it came down that they said, the ambassador of Saudi Arabia said, we don't want the kid. We've got nothing to charge him with. Just as much, you know, with the few of the Guantanamo detainees who have been returned, say, to Britain and Australia, those governments hold them for 2 or 3 days and they let them go. They say they haven't done anything. But still, none of that is affecting the American people. The American people don't give a darn about what's going on in Guantanamo.
Well, some of us do. What happens when you and your lawyer friends are sitting around at lunch? Are you guys, like, really scared to death that this is the end of the republic forever? Or is this kind of a temporary thing, we're going to get past this?
I think that people now think that it's changed. It's going to be this way for a very long time, and it's going to get a lot worse.
We've got these ghost
Because
versions,
it wasn't
too.
Just a little blip now after September 11th, and there's so many other things that the Bush administration is doing. I mean, when you take a man like John Bolton, who, you know, wishes that the UN building would be toppled, who despises the UN, when you make him the ambassador to the UN, when you take a man who wrote about specific techniques of torture that could be used and you put him at the head of the Justice Department, what do you expect? I mean, there's no hope, and this is going to be ingrained. And I tell you what,
hurry.
The Democrats are going to like it when they get in power. They're not going to change a thing.